The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Hello, wackos. Just updating my Instagram stories to reflect what we're doing right now. Welcome to Without a Country. I'm Corinne Fisher. Mike, is for what we're doing today, is that going to just be on the regular? Is there a new Gas Digital website URL? What's happening? I have no idea what's happening here at the company. You're not. Your mic's not on.
Drop the network, which is gasdigital.com, Gas Digital Live, always live and free every 7 p.m.
You what? Fucking corporate cock.
It is. I'm sorry that we're...
You gave a whole ass speech. I asked for a URL. You gave a whole speech. So wait, is gasdigital.com?
/live.
Okay.
Every Tuesday at 7, baby.
Okay. So yeah, that's there's a new website for Gas Digital, as you just heard, even though the old website's still up, but that, you know, that's just how...
That just sends you to the new website.
That sent me to the old one. That, you know, things are always confusing here. That's what makes it fun. That's what makes it a fun, a little, it's good for your, it's like a Sudoku every time you have to figure out where Gas Digital is streaming live over here. I'm just updating it because Mike and Jorge and I, we're going to do, I don't even know if Jorge has been updated on what we're doing on the show. Who knows? Who knows what we're doing? We're doing a live Knicks playoffs watch along today. The game does start at 7:30. We're not going to be able to start at 7:30, but the first two quarters don't really matter anyway, because that's just some magic trick where the Knicks will act like they're playing good. And then they'll reveal how they're actually going to play in the third quarter. But we'll try to get in at some point in the second quarter, because I have curated a news program for today's show that is, you know, I don't know. I was trying to do like 45 minutes, you know, so maybe we can get into the game by 8. But anyway, I'm updating the thing on that. Obviously, if you're listening to this later, it doesn't matter. None of this matters. You can just turn it off. I don't know if we're changing the stream, because we can't put this watch along on YouTube, right, Mike?
We could put the watch along part.
But I mean, you can't put the Knicks game part, can you? It'll just be my commentary. I don't know what's going on. We're trying something new, and also making an excuse for us to dick around at work, basically.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah. This is like when your teacher just wanted to do something anyway, like when she wanted to watch like a documentary about Princess Diana. And then she was like, you know what? The whole class is actually going to watch a documentary about Princess Diana. And we're going to all want to write a paper on it because I'm going through a divorce. Like that's, and I used to respect a teacher a lot for that, you know, because I can't imagine now being an adult with adult level mental problems showing up and having to teach a bunch of like seventh graders how to use nouns and verbs properly, and then like I'm going through a mental breakdown in my head. Like when you really think about that, just they just let adults loose that we don't know. Our parents don't know them. You don't know what they're going through. Absolute psychopaths.
You meet them like twice a year.
Yeah, no, I know. I remember in middle school or like very early high school. It might have been like ninth grade or something. I had a teacher who she was a social studies, you know, history teacher, whatever. She said that she doesn't think a woman should be president, and she wasn't joking. And I was like, what? Who have we been left alone with? And I don't feel safe anymore. But Mike shrugging, he's like, I hope my daughter gets that teacher.
I mean, I bet she's got tenure.
Right? Who the fuck knows what's happening?
She knows how to play the game. That woman's doing well.
Oh, God. I think in her personal life, she was kind of doing well by the standards of society. But anyway, okay, so I'm updating my story. We'll do that. Hopefully that goes somewhere. All right, moving on. I wanted to start the show today with a couple shout outs to men. Okay. This is a first. It's not gonna happen again.
We love it.
And first off, obviously, happy belated birthday to Mike Harrington. His birthday was yesterday. He does share his birthday with the lovely Karen Feehan, which I forget every year. I forget that you share your birthday with her. And then I go, two of my fucking favorite people share a birthday. Very exciting. And I was patiently awaiting what your fiance would say about you on your birthday, because I think that's kind of like what the female partner says about their heterosexual male partner on a birthday, on an anniversary, whatever. That's to me like Santa's like naughty or nice list. That's the real update. That's what's really going on in the relationship. And so I was patiently awaiting. I knew there would be an Instagram post, and there was. And this is what it says, courtesy of Alex Scarlato, formerly of the show. Happy birthday, the ML. You have it fucking ready, you sick bitch.
Multimedia experience.
You sick bitch. Happy birthday to M. Harrington, the man who has never failed to follow through on a promise. I liked that a lot. Strong start. I love you to pieces. Thank you for making my life everything you said it would be and more. Looking forward to celebrating with you every year until we croak, and then coming to find you in the next life so we can party some more. What a lovely caption. I think that really captures the essence of who Mike Harrington is. You know, a great partner to a strong woman, and we salute you here at Without a Country today. Additionally, I want to salute my neighbor who, listen, he's really kissing my ass right now because he is doing the renovation from hell next door to me. And as I've mentioned many times before on this show and on Guys We Fucked, he is so lucky that I have had the handful of tragedy that I have had in the past couple of years, so that a year-long loudest renovation where shit is falling off my shared wall to wake me up, dust everywhere, fucking salsa music, things falling down, walls crumbling, books falling off my shelf, picture frames breaking. He is so lucky that my dad, grandfather, guy I was dating died, best childhood best friend died, and that I went through the worst breakup of my life in the past 5 years, because otherwise I would be really mad about this. Okay. Otherwise I would be so mad, but it really pales in comparison to all those things. So, but anyway, he's been, really kissing my ass because I think he realizes how fucking lucky he is, because out of all the women in Manhattan, I would say I'm handling this renovation better than any of them would, and any person, not even woman. And so I was woken up yesterday morning with a text from him, because he has to fucking rip down my fence and you know, assorted other nonsense bullshit. But then he, and this is why I guess he's been married to a beautiful woman for a long time. Then he added in that he saw my interview in this documentary that's coming out this fall on MSNBC called Periodical. And I guess, I don't know, he might be in the film industry. I guess I should talk to my neighbors more. Who the fuck knows? I've only known him for 4 years. And he said that, and he texted me and he was like, oh, by the way, I saw your interview on Periodical. And he said, you were so sharp and funny and poignant. And I was like, this guy, I was like, this renovation's obviously going to go over a year. That's what that text message told me. But it did make me fucking laugh. Shout out to him that he sat through the documentary Periodical. And again, that's why he's together. This is the kind of man, like, and again, it probably goes against all co-op rules that I'm talking about him on my show, but whatever. They knew what they got into when they sold a unit to the Guys We Fuck girl. but this guy, like, he would wear He would wear a scarf just for fashion. That's the kind of guy he is. He's not American. He's Israeli. Beautiful family, beautiful, beautiful wife. Just like they, and like the fact that he not only sat through but enjoyed a documentary called Periodical, where it's like me and Christina and Gloria Steinem just talking about menstruation for 90 minutes to 2 hours, and that he enjoyed it and got something out of it. I was like, this really speaks to who you are, your future, and why his wife looks amazing all the time. She's because I feel like she's being actually taken care of. So I want to salute him in addition to Mike. And then third salute goes to, I walked myself to Chipotle today. That was my, I decided I was allowed to go to Chipotle if I walked there and back. It's a 20-minute walk there and back. I don't live near Chipotle. And on my way back from the Chipotle, it was, school was letting out, so all the kids were walking home. And a girl behind me was talking to her other young female friend. And I caught the conversation a little bit midway through, but basically she was saying, listen, after school hours, we go home to our houses and we hang out and we can talk about boys nonstop and relationships and all that kind of shit then. But she's like, when we're in school, we stop talking about that stuff. We talk about our teachers. We talk about our grades. We talk about our future, and we think about the things that we're going to do with our lives. And I mean, listen, I love listening in on other people's conversations, not so much to be nosy. I'm truly curious about how humans interact. But I mean, also, like, just, you know, as a writer, it's like they're fucking writing dialogue for your next TV show or movie right behind you, and you're just gonna, you know, absolutely steal it. That's what everyone is doing. So if you want your own personal dialogue in a film, you better write that film yourself. But anyway, that's why I kind of always listen to people talking instead of music. And it took everything in me not to turn around and fucking full on salute this woman, because I said she is going to grow up to be a fine. Yeah, that's the next AOC behind us right there. Like, she is a fine young woman with principles. And that really, it's a little thing like that that really ignites my fire for the future of America. And I was so, so happy to hear that conversation. It's nice. You know, everyone can't be level-headed, but to have that level-headed girl in a group of friends, she's upping the caliber and the value of that friend group a lot. Also, before I forget, I did wear a Knicks-themed outfit for our watch-along. You missed the other part of our salute, but it's fine, Michael. I'm wearing this orange bra and this blue sweater because we got to celebrate the Knicks, even though my baby boy Derrick Rose can't see me in my mind. He can see me. All right, moving on to after we did our man salutes, because I think that was deserved, and a woman salute. One was a woman. We're going to do enemy of the state. This week's enemy of the state, because of the Met Gala, is Karl Lagerfeld. Okay.
Enemy of the state.
For those of you uninterested or just who don't know about the fashion world, the Met Gala happened last night. I feel like I swear to God, I feel like the Met Gala happens 8 times a year. I feel like every other Monday is the Met Gala. It's constantly the Met Gala. What in reality, how many times does it happen? 2 times a year? It has to be happening more than once a year. Wait, how many times does the Met Gala happen a year? Because I swear to God, it's always the fucking... Okay, so it says it's only annual, held on the first Monday of May, but I swear to God, it's always the Met Gala. It's just continuously, it's like a loop of Met Gala that's always happening. But anyway, so it was yesterday, and the theme was Karl Lagerfeld. If you don't know, famous fashion designer, he's the one who looks like a founding father with like kind of the white pony, very, very sleek, usually wearing a black blazer and black sunglasses. I'm sure looks like a corpse in person, whatever, not alive anymore. But a lot of, and this, I'm not the only one to say this. There are tons of articles on how Karl Lagerfeld is, you know, kind of problematic, which, yes, is an overused word. And, you know, if you search through our diaries, our text messages, any conversation we've had, or, you know, podcast clips, enough shit can be isolated so that any of us looks like a crazy person. That being said, Karl Lagerfeld, not a comedian. So, you know, I don't know. He's kind of like is one of these guys like Clarence Thomas, like known for saying wacky things. And I guess it's more harmful when it's Clarence Thomas because he's making decisions for the country. Whereas like with Karl Lagerfeld, like do I really care if the guy like ironing my lapels and putting sparkles on them hates Jews? I guess not. You know, I guess I don't care. But it's not great. It doesn't make you feel good wearing the stuff. And so he has said some really sketchy things throughout history. So a lot of people were like, I can't believe that we're doing the theme in honor of him. And even though he's dead, all these fucking celebrities were posting pictures about how they used to be friends with him and just like absolutely kissing his ass in the most cringeworthy way. And I'm cringing when I use the word cringeworthy because I hate the word cringeworthy. Just absolute disgusting ass kissing. Like, if you think it's sad how society treats celebrity, it's even sadder how celebrities treat like producers, directors, money, you know, financiers, restaurateurs, fashion people, the kind of people that they can get something from and that can take them to the next level of their career. It is like, it makes me not want to be like a famous actor or because these people are really like the biggest ass kissers of them all, because it's not them who is really holding the power. Like, they hold the power of the audience, but they hold very little power, I think, within actual Hollywood. It's people like Harvey Weinstein who really, or, you know, formerly have a lot of power there. So this is from The Guardian, because they did a pretty good article about it. It says the late creative director of Chanel, who died in 2019, this is all about Karl Lagerfeld, was a behemoth in the fashion world, yet his list of accomplishments was almost as long as his list of controversies. He said he was, quote, fed up with the Me Too movement and questioned the claims of victims who came forward during that time. This is a gay man. What shocks me most in all of this are the starlets who have taken 20 years to remember what happened, Lagerfeld told Numero magazine. Numero? I don't know why I said Numero magazine, not to mention the fact that there are no prosecution witnesses, which is like, what? It's like, yeah, most times when you get sexually assaulted or raped, like they try not to have witnesses. Like, that's kind of the strategy going on there, my guy. Another quote he had is, one cannot, even if there are decades between them, kill millions of Jews so you can bring millions of their worst enemies in their place. Lagerfeld, who was German, said in 2017 he had apparently taken issue with then German Chancellor Angela Merkel's decision to allow Syrian refugees into Germany at the time. Quote, I know someone in Germany who took a young Syrian and after 4 days said, quote, the greatest thing Germany invented was the Holocaust, he added. You know, that's the quote that's been circulating most. And it feels like maybe just you have like, where in an interview about slacks does that need to come up? Like, how did we even get there in the conversation? It feels like he went out of his way in a couple of these instances to really let everybody know how he felt.
Hold on. That's,
yes.
That was pro-Jew.
No, I'm not saying it was anti-Jew.
People have an issue with that statement?
Yeah, that's it. Go stamp it. Yeah, a lot of people have a problem with that statement.
What?
The greatest thing, I think it's the part where it said the greatest thing Germany invented was the Holocaust is the problem.
I know someone in Germany who took a young Syrian and after 4 days said the greatest thing. The German guy. The German guy said that, or the Syrian guy?
His friend said that. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What are you talking about?
I think, I'm sorry. I thought the point he was making was,
yeah,
you killed a bunch of Jews.
Yes.
Now you're bringing in Syrians, who are naturally the enemy of the Jews, and the Syrian is saying the best thing Germany ever did was the Holocaust. He's being like, Germany has no place for this. We need to protect the Jews.
I don't think that's how. I think he's number one. He's super anti immigration, so I think that's the problem with that statement. So it's kind of just like, okay, well, if you're against one group, like, you can't be like selective in your immigration stance, I believe, is people's problem with it. And then I think anytime when you're repeating the sentence, the greatest thing Germany invented was the Holocaust, that's probably not going to be something that you ever want to repeat. I think that's the problematic part of that.
if he's quoting someone else and pointing out how it's a bad thing.
No, I don't think that's what he's doing, though. I don't think that's what he's doing. He's saying, like, we cleared some space. We should have left that space is how I'm interpreting that. Because that, like, he's like saying, like, when we did this cleansing to make it one race and keep it like singularly one race, that was the best thing for Germany, like making it an Aryan nation. That's how I think that people are interpreting it and why there's such problems with it.
Oh, so he's saying, like, look, we thinned the herd. Why are we bringing in more?
That's how...
That's crazy.
Right. That's how... I mean, I agree with you. It is a... The quote out of context is a little confusing. And I was kind of like, what? Too? But because it's not like... And I think when you're reporting news, you need something like, I hate, and then racial slur to really make it... transparent who you're hating and why we should be mad at you. So I agree with you. The quote is a little jumbly, but yeah, no, that's how I think it seems to me. He's like pro ethnic cleansing. That's how I interpret it. And like, cause it's definitely a big problem. And I know this from just reading other articles is he's like, he thinks immigrants are gross and bad people. I don't necessarily think he is anti-Semitic though. I think he actually, and I can't, don't quote me on this, but I think in other articles he actually said that like all immigrants are anti-Semitic, so we can't like let any of them in, you know? Because I mean, to be anti-Semitic in Hollywood is and continue to be beloved is almost impossible. Like even just from a strategy circumstance, you know, we saw Kanye try it. But I do respect him for that. He made a hard play, and it's like to do something no one else has done before. And if anyone could make that move, it's Kanye. But I don't think it's working out too great. And then it says, as Rachel Tashian notes in the Washington Post, Anna Wintour has gone out of her way to champion designers who have been embroiled in the worst of scandals. And for those of you who don't know, Anna Wintour is now in charge of the Met Gala and deciding, you know, who goes. And I'm guessing the theme and everything like that. That list includes John Galliano, Balenciaga designer Demna, and Alexander Wang, who was accused in late 2020 of drugging and sexually assaulting several victims. Wang has denied the allegations made against him. Wintour dutifully sat in the front row of his comeback show. And I gotta say, like, Anna Wintour is Anna Wintour, but she does have a very pick me girl vibe. Like, there is something about her, considering how strong she is, the power that she has, the choices that she has, the things that she has accomplished, the rigidity of her haircut, which if anyone's ever tried to keep a bob going that perfectly that long, it is extremely difficult. I cannot, as someone who has had short hair before, I don't know how much time and effort she's putting into that, but it is fucking immaculate. So kudos to her on that. But yeah, all around, Karl Lagerfeld doesn't seem like a great guy. He's also like gay, was gay himself, but was anti-gay marriage. So has kind of those like self-hating Caitlyn Jenner vibes going on. He told Vice in 2010 that he was against the idea of gay marriage, not to mention he was famously against immigrants and criticized Germany's decision to open its border to refugees in 2017. Here's the clarification of that quote, Mike. In an interview, he went on to imply that migrants were anti-Semitic, perpetuating the pervasive and racist myth that asylum seekers are dangerous. So that's why people don't like him about that. I think it's like, also, I just don't understand why Karl Lagerfeld's views on immigration are even really being like asked about or talked about. I think we could all save ourselves a lot of heartache if we didn't ask fashion designers about their stance on immigration. I think that would just be better for everybody, truthfully. And I know that's a viewpoint that's been contested a lot. And in modern times, we think that everybody should use their voice for the greater good. But that's your greater good. So then when your favorite celebrity talks and uses their platform for what they feel is the greater good, and it's not your shared greater good, we're in a pickle now, aren't we? I wanted to talk about the Met Gala anyway, just because it is the biggest fucking ass-kissy, nonsensical waste of money night that has ever been invented. Will I go if I'm invited? Absolutely. 100%. Okay. I'm not going to wear an eat the rich dress like AOC either. I'll wear oil and put a bird in it. I don't know what I'm going to do, but Tina Fey was interviewed on a late night show because she was invited several years back, and she was like, it is absolutely disgusting. And I hated being there. And I kind of feel like that's how I would feel, but I would have to go once. And this is from Women's Wear Daily. The Met Gala, as we know it today, is one of the biggest events for fashion celebrities and pop culture alike. However, it wasn't always the star-studded and dramatic costume-filled night it is now. It first started off as a charity event created by publicist Eleanor Lambert to raise funds for the then newly founded Costume Institute. The event took a cultural shift when Diana Vreeland was tapped as a consultant for the Costume Institute, changing the venue of the Met Gala to the Metropolitan Museum of Art and adding gala themes. Now, Vogue editor-in-chief Anna Wintour oversees the benefit guest list and theme, working closely with the Met each year for the event. She also is said to be said to even approve what designers the high-profile guests wear and rejecting a table sponsors chosen guests in favor of others. And this was founded, the Met Gala was founded in 1948. And again, it used to be a dinner where the tickets would cost $50. And now I believe tickets cost like $50,000. And like my accountant told me many times when I was talking to him about charity events, and I myself have run a charity event, he's like, charity events are great, and charity events certainly can raise a lot of awareness. But he's like, if you are truly just concerned with getting money to a certain cause, the money that you spend on a charity event, he's like the move, if you just care about the charity, is just to make the donation. He's like, the problem with that, though, is that many times people won't make the donation if there's not a way for them to get photographed, to look fancy, to have an event. And so that's the problem. So it's like all these celebrities obviously could have easily, for the most part, you know, donated $50,000 if they cared so much about this particular cause. But they're not going to do it unless they have a runway opportunity. So they're going to spend millions and millions of dollars on the event, on the table, on the hair, on the makeup, on the dresses, on the, you know, the cars, on the planes, you know, the pollution, all this shit. And then ultimately they're going to make just as much or even maybe a little less than they would have if each of the celebrities just simply wrote a check for $50,000. And I think that was a good lesson that my accountant taught me. Because, you know, I was always under the impression that, like, oh, you know, you have to spend money to make money. And I think sometimes that's true. But in the case of charity events, just write the check. Or just admit that you also want attention and that nothing is free in life, even if it's going to a charity, and then we can all be transparent and happy individuals. It sounded like you wanted to say something, Michael.
$50K a year, up from $30K last year.
Well, I was talking about the original 1948 ticket price.
No, I know.
Which was 50.
It started at $50. It was $30K last year. They jumped by.
I guess they did COVID pricing still last year. That's a huge fucking jump, though. But it is, I mean, like, and also I was just watching it last. I was particularly annoyed last night because I was like, not one but two people showed up dressed as literal cats. Like, come the fuck on. Just a bunch of assholes. Obviously, Jared Leto did it because he's him. And then Doja Cat also did it. And they were both only meowing. Like, the rampant mental illness in this industry is out of control. And I was talking to my therapist. I go, listen, I know it's not been proven that mental illness is contagious, but I gotta say, I feel like it is, because I feel myself catching it being around these fucking people all the time. Hey there, responsible wackos over the age of 21 living in states where Delta 8 is legal. Do you want to get high? Really high? Really super duper legally high? Well, then now's the time to go to yodelta.com, where you can stock up on high quality lab tested Delta 8. You know, we talk about this product every week. We love it here at Gas Digital and at Without a Country. It works. Get their vape, get their gummies, and go absolutely buck wild. If you're over the age of 21 and living in the majority of states where this is legal, you're going to go over to yodelta.com and stock up on Delta 8. What's Delta 8? Well, it's found in hemp and can be legally shipped to various states and get you high. At yodelta.com, you can find a mix of gummies and vapes for all your getting stoned needs. I can tell you that Delta 8 works and that these products should be taken responsibly. So once more, that's yodelta.com, the official Delta 8 sponsor of the Gas Digital Network. And if you use promo code GAS, G-A-S, you're going to get 25% off. Once more, that's promo code GAS, G-A-S, for 25% off. Yo Delta, home of the Delta 8 that will get you super high. Now back to Without a Country. So those are my thoughts on the Met Gala. Again, absolutely going if someone asks. And even like Josh Groban went, and it's so funny because he's so famous, but I think like in the scheme of the Met Gala, one of the lower tier guests, because he was kind of like, you know, it looked like he fucking took an Uber there, honestly, with his girlfriend, who's also a theater actor. And, you know, Josh Groban right now is in Sweeney Todd, which I did see. I saw him in Sweeney Todd. Fantastic. But he was like theater kids going to like the big fancy event. And so like when Josh Groban feels like he's an extra at an event, like, you know, kids are getting fucked somewhere at an after party. So let me know. I would also love to hear from anyone. If anyone's ever been, even if you like fucking worked at the Met Gala, like even if you were a cocktail waitress at the Met Gala, write me or DM me, because I want to know your experience and how these people actually are. I'm sure you signed a non-disclosure agreement, but you know, your secret's safe with me. I love celebrity details. I've had people in my hotel room to talk about secret Justin Bieber shit, and I never revealed their identities. So I am a trustworthy individual as far as that is concerned. Next important topic, you know, almost as important as the Met Gala, but not quite. This is just breaking news from CNN. A convicted sex offender and two teenage girls believed among seven bodies found at his Oklahoma home. A convicted sex offender and two missing teenage girls were believed to be among seven bodies found at the man's Oklahoma home on Monday, authorities said. Jesse L. McFadden, the 39-year-old offender, was found dead at his home in Henrietta, about 90 miles from Oklahoma City, just hours after records shows she missed a scheduled court appearance. The missing teens, 14-year-old Ivy Webster and 16-year-old Brittany Brewer, were believed to be among the bodies. Okmulgee County Sheriff Eddie Rice said, noting the medical examiner would provide a final confirmation of their identities. Webster and Brewer had been the subject of an endangered/missing advisory issued by the Oklahoma Highway Patrol, which said they were last seen early Monday, so yesterday, in Henrietta, and could have been traveling with McFadden. The seven bodies were found at a property where McFadden lived and was listed as his home in the Oklahoma Sex Offender Registry. The bodies were found not in the residence, but just on the property, Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation spokesperson Gerald Davidson said Monday. McFadden was set to stand trial on charges of solicitation of a minor at 9 a.m. yesterday, but failed to show up, according to court records. A bench warrant for failure to appear was issued, the records show, and authorities then discovered the bodies while executing a search warrant. The court date stemmed from charges filed in 2017 when McFadden was accused of using a cell phone to exchange nude photos and videos with an underage girl while he was serving time for a 2003 rape conviction. This guy is like the Energizer Bunny. He keeps on going. Ivy Webster's mother, Ashley Webster, told CNN that they lived on the same block as McFadden and that their families had been friends since December 2020. She said she didn't know about McFadden's criminal history. What is Megan's List still a thing? Is that still a fucking...
Where you have to go and announce it to
yeah.
the neighbors? I believe it is.
Yeah. So, like, let me look. Oklahoma. Because I'm like, unless you just wasn't looking. What the fuck? Megan's List for Oklahoma. I can't... Wait, Megan's, what am I typing? Megan's Law, still going? That's how I search on Google.
So I just found an article by the Oklahoma Mega Group. No restrictions on Oklahoma sex offender moving next. So I'm going to look into that.
Okay. Yeah. Because it says when you look it up that all states in the U.S. have now have some form of Megan's Law. but it's not going on. And again, Megan's Law was highly contested because it was including like people like, you know, two 16-year-olds who had fucked each other like on the, you know, sex offender, or like when a 16-year-old fucked an 18-year-old or something, like some like wacky things like that, that you would be on like a sex offender list, which is obviously ridiculous. But they, you know, so they needed to make some changes to that. That being said, like, I don't know. It is, it's hard because you want people to be able to grow and change and be forgiven, but then you also don't want, you know, 14-year-olds getting fucked and murdered. So it's a difficult thing to look into. But anyway, the family obviously didn't know about McFadden's criminal history. All the kids spent time together. We never had any issues with the family. His wife seemed nice, always married, and would even drop off anything she baked. Ooh, there definitely was coming that. She said she received a Snapchat message from Ivy around midnight on Saturday, and then another Snapchat message around 10 a.m. on Sunday. Webster also said she received a call from McFadden later in the day saying they were in a nearby town. Okay, this is the part where it's like, what the fuck? You're like, I don't know how many times people have to let their sons and daughters go hang out with a family friend to know that you can never let your kids hang out with a family friend. Like, family friend, unacceptable person to be around your kids. Jesse also called me around 5 p.m. on Sunday and told me they were in McAllister, but said he couldn't talk because he had a bad signal. It was hard to hear him. The call kept breaking, Webster said. Webster said she and her husband began to worry when the hours passed and Ivy still didn't return home, even though she had school the next day. Ivy went to Henrietta Middle School and played softball and was set to start high school in the fall. I know it's common to say, all right, this is the where they say that she's an amazing person. And again, I'm not doubting that she is, but that's not part of the news. All right, so that's the end of it. So they just like disappeared and the kids are dead now. But again, that's kind of being updated. But I also want information on the other seven, on the other fucking bodies. They only told me about four. And that was the most recently updated article on that, because it was updated like 55 minutes before I put it on the document. Wait, seven bodies, Oklahoma.
There is something very unfair about sex offenders. Like, this seems to be a common theme with sex offenders.
What do you mean?
Like, you don't want to go to jail as a sex offender. Right. So you typically, like, a lot of these guys end up killing themselves before they ever stand trial. And it's like,
well, this would be, I think if you're fucking not only fucking, that sounds terrible, but like if you're fucking like teenage girls, I think you'll be OK in prison. No, I think pedophiles are the ones. And I think you're like when you're 16, 14, you have the other criminal. Hey, if you're a criminal or a sex offender, call in. You know, I know one of you is listening. Come on. I feel safe. I'm 37 years old. You don't want to fuck me. Yeah. Found dead with family. So I guess what did he do? He called. Sex offender controlled my daughter's family. So he killed like the rest of his family? Like, did he have a daughter? Like, these articles are so unclear. Even the way the article started, I was like, what the fuck happened here? Because this is apparently an ongoing news story, but there's so much death and destruction in the world that I hadn't done it. Okay, so some grandma's talking. So Holly Guess and her grandchildren, who were spending the weekend with the family. Mayo said Tiffany was close friends with Ivy and Brittany, who were spending the weekend with the family. So it seems like he killed his own family and then the family friends. Okay, so that makes sense. I guess that makes a little more sense then, that like he also had daughters of the same age. But like, it's also like he kind of over the course, like 2017 is not that long ago, that like even the wife should be trusting him. Like, there's just a lot of gray area going on here. I don't know how that happened, but it's fucked up. Seven bodies is a lot. That's the reason I clicked on it, because I was like, that's a lot of bodies to find on one property, even in this day and age. Like, outside of a mass shooting, that's a lot of body. This guy's a serial killer. You know, that's not great. Okay. Well, Michael, continue researching that. I wanted to.
I did find something actually very interesting while I was looking for this.
What?
A woman in Tulsa. So essentially, because of the way that they stack things, like a person on the sex offender registry can't live within so many feet of a school or a park or whatever.
Sure.
So based on all that,
yeah.
there's only like 8% of the entire city they can live.
Uh-huh.
But
in Tulsa?
In like, yeah, I think Tulsa was the example they said that was 92%, and then Oklahoma City was 84%.
Uh-huh.
But in the example they gave here, the guy was able to move in next door to his victim. And there's technically no law against that.
So wait, so someone he had previously assaulted?
Yes, he bought the house next door.
Okay, that should be illegal.
Right?
That's because that's just like you're terrorizing the person. Who's the fucking real estate agent who closed on that? Who is that?
An evil person.
Everyone should be in jail. I mean, I guess you wouldn't know. I mean, you know, I guess you wouldn't know who's closing on the house until they fucking move in, quite frankly. But that's crazy.
Yeah. So it said that back in 2018, they were introducing a bill into the Oklahoma Congress to try to prevent that. I'm looking into where that bill went.
Yeah, and I'm surprised that if you sexually assaulted someone, wouldn't you have some kind of lifelong restraining order against them where they couldn't be within X amount of feet of any of their victims? Like, that's really wild. We have a very flawed system. But the thing is, there's always like, because of like the over fairness in some ways of our legal system, which is amazing. And I think we often talk about the flaws in it when in reality, like in other places, someone could just point at us and our hand would be chopped off. So I'm happy to live here. But I think there are so many loopholes and if it's like not been written down in a bill or in a law, like, and you can figure out a way around it, you can do it. Because that's how that's how the law is looked over. Like, there are so many. Like, we do it all the time for abortion laws. Man, that's fucked up. All right.
Okay. So it's messed up. He moved back in with his grandma, who lived next door to them.
Yeah, that shouldn't have been allowed.
That should not be allowed.
You should not be allowed within like a 5-mile radius of a person that you were convicted of sexually assaulting. That's bananas.
Yikes.
Yeah. That's.
Oh, this is pretty cool.
Did he assault the person again?
No, bring this up. So she's now 21.
Yeah.
And they put this up in their front lawn.
For those of you listening at home, there's a huge sign that said child sex offender Harold Dwayne English, and there's two red arrows pointing to their house. It's a big ass sign. I guess there's more information on the bottom that's blurred out that I guess gives away the address or something.
Yeah.
But that is quite funny. Good for her. Good. You know, I love when someone can have a sense of humor about their rape. Good for them. Jesus fucking Christ, we live in a brutal, brutal society. All right, this is from yahoo.com. Those of you who follow me on Twitter already saw this, but masked neo-Nazis gathered outside a brewery hosting a drag brunch fundraiser in Columbus, Ohio on April 29th. It's just Groundhog's Day at this point. This is the same news every week. There's fucking Nazis, there's a drag event, there's some trans athlete doing something that people are mad about. Same shit every week. In video filmed by Instagram user Granger, the protesters were seen wearing red shirts, sunglasses, and balaclavas. Is that how you say it? Shane always used to say that. And I know what it is.
Balaclava, yeah.
Yeah. And holding a large banner with the words, "There will be blood," as a drag performance took place at Land Grant Brewing Company on Saturday. It's so funny to have the thing say "There Will Be Blood," which is like a Hollywood movie, which I can't think of anything gayer. At least one person was seen wearing fatigues and holding a rifle. The Columbus Dispatch reported that the protesters appeared to belong to the white supremacist neo-Nazi group Blood Tribe. God, that sounds like a hack metal band. According to reports, the protesters shouted neo-Nazi slogans and gave the Nazi salute, yada, yada. Stonewall Columbus released a statement on April 30th denouncing the protesters. The terrorist hate group demonstration at Land Grant's drag brunch supporting Kaleidoscope Youth Center was a deplorable act that aimed to silence a group, cause terror, and perpetuate unwanted hate. Our queer communities must not be silenced. Our communities must not be stricken with fear. Our communities must stand unified in our power. We must not be dissuaded from sharing our stories, our presence, our pride. Drag is not a crime. So, yeah, I think the most jarring part of that is the actual video, if you want to take a look for yourselves. But they're also, their faces are completely covered. And it's like, well, if you feel so strongly about this, as many people on Twitter were saying, like, fucking show your face. But you're not going to, because you know that you're going to lose your job. And I know maybe you disagree with the politics of your job, but if you're so self-righteous, if you believe that you are so correct, well, then you shouldn't really be working at a job that doesn't agree that drag is evil. Like, I really feel like that. It's like, listen, if you're going to have a hateful point of view, fucking have the integrity to stand up to all the people that don't share that point of view. And like, I really fucking mean that. I absolutely mean that. There's nothing that annoys me more than someone who has a view that point that they like hide because they feel like they are going to have to answer to the repercussions of feeling that way. Like, be bold, be brave. Like, truly, if you have a hateful view, you yourself, I'm guessing, don't see it as hateful. You see it as protecting children. You see it. So then show your face, speak out against it. Like, I really, really mean this. Don't be a pussy ass bitch about this. Like, nothing. We're talking about deplorable. Drag isn't deplorable. You're deplorable. If you can't show your face, are you scared your job's going to fire you? Are you scared? You're a baby.
I have the video. Do you want it?
I've seen it before, but yeah, sure. Let's put in a visual element. Because the main guy who's kind of directing them, he shows his face, but everyone else has, also, some of these people should have gotten an XXL shirt or done some sit-ups before they showed up at the Nazi protest because these shirts are too tight.
This seems like kids.
Yeah, well, and that's the sad part. I'm sure a lot of them, you know, are quite young. Even this guy, he doesn't look to be very old. I would guess he's younger than me, even though he's balding and he had to shave his head. But luckily, he has a nice shaped head, so it worked out for him. And he got that face tattoo, so everyone maybe wouldn't think about how he's going bald, but made it a look.
No, dude, that's classic Norse.
Well, I know he's going for the neo-Nazi look, but you can see the outline of his hairline, and you can see like he did a good job styling it, but he was also had a receding hairline, so he just kind of leaned in, and I respect that. I respect that is the move, and I respect it.
These kids all look like none of these guys can fight.
No, they're fat. They can't fight at all.
What are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah,
you gotta roll with that many other incels to feel safe?
Yeah, it's not good. And again, like, I don't know. And there was a note on this because, you know, I am very much, I think that, you know, peaceful protest, even if it's hateful, I think, you know, that is part of what makes America America. And I think they should be allowed to stand there as long as they don't have weapons. But, what does it say? Someone wrote a note on here. It says, it's just a user comment. While I despise fascism in whatever form it takes, even these thugs, that their words, not mine, are entitled to, nothing makes you seem like more 87 years old, are entitled to exercise the right of peaceful assembly. That said, the presence of any weapon removes the required element of peaceful from the assembly and should have resulted in the immediate arrest and jailing of all involved. But I saw that comment and I was like, I just don't, was there a weapon? I didn't see. I mean, the guard guy had a weapon, but he was like a police. Well, he was an officer of the law. I don't think any of them had weapons, did they?
I'm seeing flags, cameras.
Yeah.
That looks like the police standing behind them.
Well, and it's also difficult because in a right to carry state, and I'm not sure that Ohio is, it seems like it would be.
Hold on. There's one guy who looks like he's got a holster with something in it.
Let me see. Let me look into.
Might be a gun. Might be a taser.
Yeah. So concealed carry in Ohio as of June 13th, 2022, anyone 21 years of age or older who is not prohibited from firearm possession under state and federal law and meets the definition of a qualifying adult may carry a firearm in public without a permit or background check. Because that's the thing. It's like, it's hard. What is a peaceful protest in a right to carry state? Because that's like a problem, because I've never protested in a right to carry state, so I don't have the answer to that question. Because I see what the user comment, I see his or her point that, like, yes, it becomes a threat when you have a weapon, but what do you do when you are in a right to carry state, because I'm guessing some of these people always have firearms on them. They don't leave the house without their firearms. So therefore, if it's in a holster, but they're not brandishing it, is that a peaceful protest? Is it not a peaceful protest? Like, how do you, what qualifies a peaceful protest in a right to carry state?
Adding to that, Ohio is an open carry state. So for that guy, like, who didn't have, it wasn't concealed.
Right. Right. Concealed is actually even scarier.
Yeah.
I like when I can see it.
I agree, but it does kind of just put it on Front Street.
Yeah. I like to see, listen, I mean, anytime I'm like, and half the time when I see someone holding, having like a gun in a holster, it's like in line at an Arby's or something, but I just like always stay away from that person. I just can't. I cannot be.
I feel like that's way more Wawa than.
Well, I don't. I'm talking about places I go. I'm not like a big Wawa person. I only go to Wawa when I'm with Christina because she loves it. Mm. But I'm like, I didn't grow up on Wawa, so it doesn't hold the same place in my heart.
Oh yeah, you went to college in New York too.
Yeah, I had never been to a Wawa before I went with Christina Hutchinson. So, yeah. Wait. So peaceful protest, right to carry states. Let's see if we
okay. So it says here, firearms at demonstrations are regulated by a patchwork of federal, state, and local restrictions. Many states have permissive laws around bearing and using guns, including laws allowing guns to be openly carried in most public locations.
So that means it's kind of like state by state.
Yeah. So if you're in a place where you can do that, yeah, it's not breaking any laws.
Right. Well, that was kind of my point. So it's like, okay, say this person did spot someone with a holster in this video, it doesn't matter because it's Ohio. Like, I'm guessing because the person started the comment by saying, I hate fascism, that they're from some fucking, probably from like Manhattan or something. But I'm guessing they maybe don't live in a right to carry state, so they don't understand that. But that's the problem. I mean, that's one of the main problems with America. It's like you go to a different state, you might as well be in a different country because the laws change so drastically state to state.
Yeah, but I'm also, like, at one point in that article that we read, it said that there was somebody carrying a rifle, no?
I've talked about rifles too much now. Well, that's why that's what I was kind of, like, going over. I'm like, I don't think that I did. Wait.
I didn't see one in that.
No, I didn't either. Yeah, a whole banner, sunglasses. Yeah, I don't think we did that. I think that's why I kind of was questioning it. Yeah, this was a really short article. I don't think it said anything about guns.
No. Okay.
Yeah. That's kind of my point. All right. So now you know, depending where you are. So, I mean, yeah, I then say,
Oh, no. At least one person was seen wearing fatigues and holding a rifle.
Okay. Oh, okay.
But I didn't see that in the
video.
Yeah.
I didn't see that either. But again, well, wearing fatigues, I mean, I wear fatigues sometimes. That's like, that's just like fucking Mel B from the Spice Girls wears fatigues. I mean, like, that's just fashion at this point. I agree, in certain contexts, it becomes not fashion. It becomes scary. But whatever. All right. I just wanted to point that out because it's, you know, we talk, there's some states we talk about all the time because of their fuckery, like Texas and Florida. But, you know how I feel about Ohio. A lot of fuckery going on in Ohio. And because it's kind of higher up and towards the east a little bit more, I don't think we concentrate on it, but there's a lot of problems going on in Ohio.
So I am seeing, look at this guy here. You can see he's got, that's very clearly a rifle.
Oh, that's like that almost looks like an electronic bow and arrow. What the fuck is that?
That's a rifle.
Are you scared? Okay. I see the top of it now.
You see?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, does that apply to open carry? Can you open carry an assault rifle?
You know why? I didn't even know he was included in the group because I thought that was security because he's not in a red shirt.
Yeah, actually, that could be a cop.
Yeah, that's what I thought, because I'm like, there are like this guy pacing in the front. I thought he was either a cop or military or something like that was overseeing the protest, which to me is normal. Because, you know, these, you know, when you're doing like Black Lives Matter protests or something, these people show up in fucking full SWAT gear.
Yeah, that could also be the Antifa guy being like, if it pops off, I'm the one with a gun.
interesting. Yeah, it's hard to say. All right. Moving on to financial scams. Mike found this one. Mike, you love to talk about financial issues in Congress. That is one of your favorite things. This is from the New York Post. It's an opinion piece by James Bovard. Congress's unconstitutional pay scam gets members $34,000 raises, which is funny because I guess in the big scheme of politics, like that's like not a lot for a year, but then that's like some people's whole salary if you're working minimum wage, you know. Washington, D.C. needs an emergency supply of snazzy sandwich boards announcing we'll legislate for food. A hunger crisis on Capitol Hill gave congressional leaders no choice but to trample the Constitution. Thanks to a backroom deal, House members can now claim automatic reimbursement of $258 a night for lodging expenses and $79 a day for meals in D.C., even if they don't spend a dime. But though House members can pocket up to $34,000 a year in additional tax dollars, it's not a pay raise because politicians are entitled to use false labels for everything they do. There is a pity party in Washington. You weren't invited, but you'll pay the bill. Members of Congress are whining that they receive only $174,000 a year, more than triple the average U.S. salary and higher pay than 93% of Americans' pocket. I would actually contest that that is more than triple the average U.S. salary because I just read another article apart from this show about the average U.S. salary. And I was it was actually like a lot higher than I thought it was. Maybe it is only in the 50s still, but I don't know. I don't know if that's even correct or where they got that information from. And it is a part-time job. The House of Representatives will be in session just 117 days this year. That didn't stop Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from moaning that Congress structures itself to exclude and push out the few working class people who do get elected. She really likes to lean into how working class she is. And at this point, she's a very big celebrity. So that makes me laugh. Congressional salaries are far higher than average Americans pay, in part to cover the extra cost of spending time in Washington. But House members wanted more. After Republicans captured the House majority in November, the Democrat-controlled House Administration Committee rushed through a provision in December to boost members' pay. The Constitution's 27th Amendment, ratified in 1992, though, prohibits any law varying the compensation for the services of the senators and representatives from taking effect until an election of representatives shall have intervened. The new windfall was labeled reimbursements and took effect thanks to a tweak in the members' congressional handbook. There was no debate or vote on the House floor. Neither the Senate nor the president had a say in the matter. Former Representative Mo Brooks, a Republican from Alabama, denounced the clandestine secrecy of the process. In a press conference Friday, Representative Hakeem Jeffries, a Democrat from Brooklyn, House Democratic leader, denied any pay raise occurred. It was just, quote, reimbursement. Jeffries used the word bipartisan five times in 1 minute to sanctify the new measure. Inside the Beltway, bipartisan bestows instant absolution. House Republican leaders did not oppose the windfall. Congress wouldn't dare openly hike its own pay because only 20% approve of how Congress is handling its job. 78% disapprove. The up to $34,000 a year benefit is part of a budget boost to provide a living wage, according to a summary from House Appropriations Committee Democrats. The new benefit system does not require the submission of receipts to reduce the burden and address the potential security risks, ruled the House's chief administrative officer. I mean, so then that really is like if you're not even submitting for reimbursement, like that really is just a pay raise. Congress last year bankrolled hiring 87,000 new IRS agents and employees to audit Americans' 1040 forms and shake more money out of their bank accounts. The new benefits are tax-free, so House members can pocket the pre-tax equivalent of $50,000 in extra income based solely on unverified claims. The House report bewailed that the personal benefits of winning a seat in Congress have decreased. But that was because Congress's reckless deficit spending helped wreck the value of the dollar, which has fallen 40% since the last pay raise Congress gave itself in 2009. That's wild that they even included in the House report the actual sentence, the personal benefits of winning a seat in Congress have decreased, because if you are actually being a politician for the correct reasons, there really should be no personal benefit. That is the point of politics, that you are serving the people. If you want personal benefits. Become a TikTok influencer, okay? There are plenty of occupations, and I have one, where there are personal benefits. And I chose it because I wanted personal benefits. If you want personal benefits, absolutely don't get into politics, okay? The report claimed permitting reimbursement would modernize the pay system. Was the goal to have congressional compensation harmonized with the nationwide epidemic of shoplifting? The covert pay raise is akin to hiring a store clerk who then announces he is entitled to pilfer cash registers to get his lunch money. How much would you pay a lawyer who didn't bother reading the contracts he signed on your behalf? Every year, Congress enacts multiple thousand-page legislative blunderbusses without bothering to read the text. Most members of Congress are millionaires. Most members are also landlords, and there is no limit to the rent they pocket on top of their salary. Nor is there any limit to the illicit profits they snare from insider stock trading, despite congressional leaders' endless promises to end that crime spree. And I would also argue, I know, and again, AOC, I actually hate, like, she's always kind of targeted just because she is like the it girl of politics right now. But we're just using her as an example since she is quoted in this article or used in this article. It's like, okay, so even if she is still kind of living what she won her seat based on, which is like not taking, you know, private money and shit like that, she is not including the inherent value of becoming a famous person and all the free shit and perks that come along with that. So to then say, like, I'm an everyday working class person is, I mean, that's, I scoff at that. The House report laments that the decision to retire from Congress is sometimes driven by financial concerns. Again, who's, if you're getting into Congress for the money, you're doing it, you shouldn't be in Congress because your heart and your soul and your integrity is not in the right place.
Also, name one time that's ever happened in the history of politics.
Yeah, this is a bit wild. It didn't mention representatives rushing to get rich by selling out America. Almost 100 former members of Congress have registered as foreign agents. That notorious revolving door inspired a Politico headline, want to be a foreign agent, serve in Congress first. The report justified the compensation boost. More candidates are willing to run for office if they see public service as an economically viable career. But the thing is, it's like, okay, so say you're making whatever, $174,000. That's a great salary for the year. I understand that we absolutely do want to encourage people other than millionaires to vie for these political offices and seats. Agreed. But it's like, if you really are a person of the people, you're not making more than $174,000 to begin with. Therefore, this would still be an increase in your wages. Like, what? But the founding, like, you know, AOC was a, she was a, she was a waitress before this. And listen, you can make a lot of money in New York City as a waitress, but I doubt she was making $174,000. I was like, my upper end, like, bartender, waiter, friends probably making, I don't know, $90,000-$100,000 a year. And that's still a fucking shit ton of money, you know, but they're working more than, whatever the 170, whatever days that they said.
More than that part-time job down in Washington.
Right. But the founding father and just like working, I mean, when you're in the service industry, you're fucking working yourself to the bone physically too. But the founding fathers didn't intend for citizens to make viable careers from endlessly seeking coercive power over other Americans. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy should strike a blow for political decency by torpedoing the backdoor pay raise, or do congressional Republicans believe that they are entitled to free lunches on top of their $174,000 salaries? Why don't they just make like a cafeteria in the fucking house for these people? Come on, like a commissary. They don't have that? Fucking 30 Rock has that. I don't want my name on an FBI terrorist watch list for inciting contempt of Congress, so here's my compromise proposal. If Congress will balance the budget and stop violating the Constitution, it can spend my tax dollars to buy all the beer that representatives and senators can drink. But Democrats only get Bud Light. Okay, that was a corny last line, but other than that, it was a good article.
So I have like J.P. Morgan Chase, mm-hmm. an executive vice, Chase & Co. vice president, yearly pay is in the $150,000 range.
Yeah. No, I mean.
Making $30,000 more a year,
right,
than a vice president for our, the most successful bank on the planet.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like these guys are also getting stock, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But Congress, you're gaining political power every year, which is your stock.
Right. Okay. And I also, I'm looking up the average salary in the U.S. is, they're saying, again, this is a fast Google, and I've seen other like things that are a little bit different. But this one says $60,575 is the average thing. So it's not exactly triple. It's a little under. It's a little over. Okay. All right. Sorry. Just doing some math. And then kind of tacking on to that last article, this is from Newsweek. Democrats sold First Republic stock, bought JP Morgan before collapse. Again, Mike loves to really be on top of these things. Representative Lois Frankel recently sold shares of First Republic Bank as well as purchased stock in JP Morgan, which on Monday took over First Republic following its collapse. First Republic Bank was seized by California regulators and sold to JP Morgan Chase, which will now assume responsibility for its debts and assets. Shares in First Republic, a San Francisco-based bank founded in 1985, fell more than 75% last week after the bank announced that depositors withdrew $100 billion in March. The collapse comes amid weeks of turmoil in the U.S. banking industry. In March, Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank both failed, setting off concerns about potential looming widespread financial troubles. Following the SVB collapse, First Republic stock quickly began to drop, prompting an attempted rescue from several larger banks, which deposited $30 billion into the institution, but ultimately failed to stop its collapse. Amid these banking troubles, several lawmakers are facing questions about recent stock trades involving First Republic Bank, and this happens all the time. Frankel, a Florida Democrat who represents areas near West Palm Beach, is among those lawmakers who sold shares of First Republic Bank in the weeks leading up to its failure. According to an April 28, 2023 financial disclosure report, Frankel first sold shares of the bank on March 16th, following SVB's collapse. Just days later, on March 22nd, Frankel also purchased shares in JP Morgan Chase & Company, according to the report. It remains unknown exactly how much stock was traded at each time, though the filing specified values between $1,001 and $15,000 for each trade. Both trades were subholdings of a Morgan Stanley IRA, according to the disclosure. Newsweek reached out to Representative Frankel's office. Frankel, in a statement to Newsweek, wrote, "My account is managed independently by a money manager who buys and sells stocks at his discretion." Several other lawmakers, including Representatives John Curtis and Earl Blumenauer, have also reported trades of First Republic Bank stocks leading up to its failure on Monday. Calls have mounted for members of Congress to be banned from being able to purchase and sell stocks, as critics say allowing them to do so opens up the possibility of politicians profiting from the industries that they are supposed to regulate. And I think that's the main thing here. It's like, okay, do I possibly believe that you have a money manager who kind of buys and sells stocks? Yes, I believe that because I do too. That being said, they usually run that shit by you. They're not just doing it willy-nilly. You know, it's your money. They're still running their decisions by you for the most part, unless you just give them carte blanche. And then secondly, yeah, that's the bottom line. You shouldn't be allowed to do this to fucking begin with. Several members of Congress have introduced bills aimed at cracking down on stock trading among their colleagues. Representative Abigail Spanberger, a Virginia Democrat, has introduced legislation that would require lawmakers and their families to place assets in a blind trust during their time in office. Senator Elizabeth Warren, a Massachusetts Democrat, and Steve Daines, a Montana Republican, last year introduced a bill that would ban members of Congress and their spouses from owning and trading stock. And it's absolutely ridiculous because they're, yes, that is one of the major ways to increase your savings, but there are certainly many other ways to do it, and fucking find one of those ways, okay? You can't have your cake and eat it too. And then last story, I guess it's interesting. It was an interesting week to do a shorter news section because It was kind of like a follow-up week. We're kind of just still kind of working on many of the same stories that we've been following week after week. But I'm making this the main story just because there was such an interesting right and left take on it. And this story, even though it is not at all of the utmost importance, I think really captures what Without a Country is really about. And again, shout out to Mike working extra hard on his birthday week, who found so many amazing articles. So this is from Fox News. And this was published on April 27th. It says transgender female runner who beat 14,000 women at London Marathon offers to give medal back. Glenique Frank's marathon finish sparked outrage on social media. And I know you kind of, you found this through, like an Instagram influencer. I know who it was. It was that the makeup kid, who's always being problematic. I believe you forwarded his Instagram to me, but he's the one who pointed it out. And then I found a news article that went along with it. So Glenique Frank, a transgender woman who ran the London Marathon in the female category, offered to give her medal back after controversy stirred when she beat out about 14,000 women in the race. Frank sparked criticism after she appeared in a BBC interview and gushed about becoming a grandmother. She told the New York Post that the London Marathon was the first race she was able to pick her own name and gender. Several other races she plans on running need her name and gender given on her passport, including the New York City, Tokyo, and Boston, among others. Frank told the outlet she was only sorry for upsetting her critics. If they want me to give my medal back, I'll say, okay, fine, no problem. Very female of you. Frank told the New York Post, if they really think I've stolen the place of a female runner, I don't mind giving the medal back because I'll run again next year for charity. They're angry because they're saying that one of 14,000 women behind me could have had my place. Really? I did the race in 4 hours, 11 minutes. There's lots of women that beat me. Frank said she understood she does not have a womb, in quotes, but insisted she did not compete as an elite runner and didn't steal any money. Frank's foray into the London Marathon irked two-time Olympian Mara Yamauchi, who finished in sixth place in the marathon at the Beijing Olympics in 2008 while representing her home country of Great Britain. Yamauchi did not mince words when she spoke on Frank's win at the marathon over the weekend. Males in the female category is unfair for females, Yamauchi wrote in a tweet. Nearly 14,000 actual females suffered a worse finish position because of him, Yamauchi wrote on Twitter. Frank said her attention was not to try to trick her. I guess her intention was not to try to trick anyone. I've known since I was 5 that I was in the wrong body, Frank said. Frank said she is still planning on running marathons and planned on entering the London race next year as other or male just to keep everybody happy. Again, definitely a woman if you're fucking doing something just to make everyone happy. That right there, I say, I believe you. Frank previously ran at an event in New York City while wearing a bra and a wig. Frank, who is a British citizen, identifies as a female. After running a 17th career marathon, she excitedly spoke about using girl power to help get through the race. Okay, so that's the right's take on it. Then look at what is revealed in the left take, which is from theadvocate.com. Again, this wasn't like super highly covered. And as you will notice, technically in the Fox article, they didn't spread any misinformation. They just left a lot of very important information out. So this is from advocate.com. Trans marathoner places 6,159th in women's category. Right-wing media throws a fit. Okay. So yes, that runner did beat out 14,000 women, but she was still in 6,159th place. So I don't think anyone really gives a shit. Some right-wing media outlets are losing it over a transgender woman who competed in Sunday's London Marathon in the female category after having run in the male category in others and didn't come anywhere close to winning. Trans runner beat 14,000 women in London Marathon after running NYC as a man, trumpeted a New York Post headline, and the story was picked up elsewhere as well. However, there were more than 6,000 women who finished ahead of the trans woman, Glenique Frank. She came in 6,159th place in the women's category. Frank had competed in some marathons, such as the New York City's, as a male because she had to participate under the name and gender on her passport, which identifies her as a man. In her home country, the United Kingdom, she wasn't bound by the passport rules as she was in other marathons outside the UK. And while the elite categories in the London Marathon must comply with World Athletics rules, which ban trans women in they have experienced male puberty, Frank was in the mass event, which is open to all, the UK's Daily Mail notes. Elite runners are eligible for prize money, others are not. Frank, a 54-year-old personal trainer, told the Post in a follow-up interview that her critics are saying that one of 14,000 women behind me could have had my place. Really? I did the race in 4 hours and 11 minutes. There are lots of women that beat me. But I, and again, just kind of reiterating that she didn't steal any money. A lot of this is the same. And then it goes on and says, I ticked female on the London Marathon registration form because I see myself as female. Frank responded in the Post interview. She is on hormone therapy, so she has a very low testosterone level, she noted. She's also 54, and she pointed out to Yamauchi, who we heard from in the other article. She has not undergone gender-affirming surgery, but plans to do so next year. I've known since I was 5 that I was in the wrong body. I mean, again, this is all kind of a moot point because she's not in the elite athletes category. This is just like, who the fuck? I don't care if a fucking chicken runs in the fucking marathon. Who cares? You're all nuts. You're running in a goddamn marathon. Like everyone in the race, can you imagine running not for money? Can you and not because a killer is chasing you? Just because you want to prove a point. I don't know. Do whatever you want. Who cares? Like everyone in the race, she received a participation medal and she has offered to return it if necessary. I mean, you want a person to return their participation trophy? Come on. But I don't want to apologize because I didn't do anything wrong, she said. She intends to run in London again next year and to register as other or male just to keep everybody happy. Other feels demeaning. She will again raise funds for charity. So, I mean, what a great example of making a news story where there is no news story, making people angry where there's no need to be angry, and dividing people in a country that is already divided. On that note, it is 8:24 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so it is time to tune into this Knicks Heat game. Again, wanted to, you know, give you a good show without missing what is truly the highlight of my life right now, which is the NBA playoffs. And I know Mike feels the same. I'm not sure how Jorge feels about this. I don't know if he's an NBA guy. Yeah, you are? Okay. Who are you rooting for? If you say the Heat, you might have to leave.
Lake show all day, baby.
Oh, Lakers? Okay. Well, they're not playing this game that we're watching. So who are you voting for? Knicks over Heat.
Knicks all day, baby.
Okay, thank you. All right, so this has been Without a Country. Make sure to follow us on social media. We're at Without a Country Podcast on Instagram. Hit subscribe on that YouTube channel. We appreciate it so much. If you want to contribute anything, it's withoutacountrypodcast@gmail.com. I am on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and Blue Sky. I'm on Blue Sky as Corinne Fisher because it's such a new app that I actually fucking got my name, which is amazing. But I'm on all the other ones at Philanthropy Gal. Please make sure to follow me and have a great rest of your week. Thanks for joining us. And if you want to watch this Knicks game with us, we're doing that now on the live stream. Obviously, only if you're listening live or watching live. Bye.